We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Admart Town and Country magazine, read by Zeb Sains.
Black Torrington Summer Fete. The companion dog show will commence at 1:30 p.m., open to all. And dogs can be entered on the day.
Our thanks to Rachel Hudson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and John Richardson. And opposite them on my left, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. Hugo, who has found out that cigarettes are bad for your political health?
This is a story about Linton Crosby, who is a strategist for the Conservative Party and also a lobbyist on behalf of tobacco companies. And there's an outrageous suggestion that this whole thing about plain packaging in cigarette packets could be somehow linked to his other role, which is obviously... Linton Crosby is obviously a fine, upstanding man, has obviously done nothing wrong. Obviously, he has completely compartmentalised these two parts of his life, and I'm really amazed we're even talking about it.
So the whole thing's gone away now, isn't it? We're not going to have cigarettes in plain packets?
Not in the immediate future, no. Which I think is a shame. I mean, people keep buying cigarettes if they're in anything. You know, they could be actually packaged inside diseased lungs and people would still be like, yeah, all right, £8, whatever.
Also the pictures on the packets are now the only education some medical students can afford, so...
I always go for the smoking when pregnant harms your babies ones, because that's not really going to affect me.
Cameron did nothing, because he doesn't dispel anything now. Whenever he's criticised about anything, like Miliband will stand up and say, have you had conversations about lobbying, or have you been lobbied? And instead of answering the question, he'll just say, why don't you just go and kiss Len McCluskey on the bum? And that's pretty much his answer to everything now, isn't it?
But do you think lobbying is a sort of disgrace in a democracy? I was wondering if we couldn't have a whip around, we could pay somebody to tell David Cameron what we actually think about him.
But then isn't that lobbying?
Oh. Curse you for paying attention, John.
Perhaps the answer to funding of political parties would be that they all have plain packaging and they're not allowed to advertise in any way. If the Liberals weren't allowed to make any promises, it wouldn't make any difference.
No.
And if you just judged people on what they look like, you'd look at Cameron and think he just looks like a hairless Tudor monarch. I think it would be quite horrible if he were running the country. And if you looked at Miliband, you'd think it would be quite depressing, but he might mean well.
Farage.
You'd think that the country was going to be run by a former RAF pilot who changed sides and fought for the Germans.
David Cameron has denied being unduly influenced by his chief election strategist, Linton Crosby, who also runs a consultancy lobbying for clients, including tobacco firm Philip Morris. The Prime Minister's spokesman insisted that David Cameron had not been lobbied by Linton Crosby before sparking up a cool, relaxing woodbine. During Prime Minister's questions, Ed Miliband clashed with David Cameron. Miliband asked a series of tough questions given to him by his sponsor, Play-Doh. Leader of the House of Commons, Andrew Lansley, said the government was not seeking to prevent or deter lobbying, but to ensure there was maximum transparency provided by Everest double glazing. 2 points to Hugo. John, who doesn't have many friends with benefits?
It must be... This will be the benefits cap then, will it?
Yes.
And Ian Duncan Donuts. the benefits cap has gone nationwide now, but it's gone out quite quietly because... it's had massive public support. It's over 70%. But that's because they basically stopped people who were busy in the street and trying to get to Nando's or something more important and said, do you think that people on benefits should get more money than people who work? Which really isn't what this is about. It's like stopping people saying, do you think baddies should be punished? And most people would say yes. And then if you go around shooting kids because they've stolen a biscuit, it's not really what the point was. And no. But then people who are on benefits, they're not happy. They're not. There's this image, I think, because of headlines where you get, like, once a year you get a fat bloke on a water slide on the front page of the Daily Mail next to the headline, like, this man claimed £12 billion a second because he said he didn't even have a head. And there's a view that like, everyone on benefits is a cheat. And really, it's most people are miserable. Even if they're on 26 grand, you've got several kids who you can't afford to feed, and they're screaming at you all the time. They're not going on massive holidays. So I don't see what the point of this cap is. It's broadly a good idea to cap what we spend, but they're going to save like £110 million a year, I think, most of which will go on rehousing families who are going to be homeless because they can't afford to live in a house anymore.
And IDS has been using these bogus figures saying that he's successfully forcing people into work, because that's how you get people into work, is you force them into it, and that works well. And people have said, actually, those figures don't show that. And he said something like, it is my belief that that is the case, or something like that. And he said, you cannot prove that there is no link. You see, that doesn't mean... That's what people say. If you say things like, I don't believe in UFOs, people say, yeah, but you can't prove there aren't UFOs. And I say, it's not my job to prove it. It's your job to prove that you were abducted and given internal examination by a Martian. it's like someone says, well, you know, it's just what I believe. You know, I think there must be an afterlife. It can't just be this. And you say, why not? And they say, well, that's just what I believe. And, you know, and that's my... And we're all entitled to our opinions. No, you're not. You're not entitled to opinions that are manifest rubbish.
I did like it. They heard Ian Duncan Smith on the Today programme, and he said the great talk about thousands being made homeless has not come true. Do you think we're 4 days into the policy? Give landlords a chance.
The great irony of all this is you've got MPs sitting there going, it's outrageous that people are paid so much money out of the taxpayers' pocket for doing nothing. And you're like, well, I suppose maybe that's quite a good point. Perhaps you could have some kind of debate about it. They're like, no, sorry, we're off on holiday for 2 months.
A cap on benefits of £26,000 per year has been rolled out nationwide by Work and Pensions Secretary Ian Duncan Smith. Mr Smith famously once stated that he could survive a week on benefits, and no doubt he could, using just his own grit, determination and his millionaire wife's trust fund. Ed Miliband took the hardline opposition stance against the policy by saying, if it works, we'll support it. 2 points to John. Vicky, whose report has left some hospitals warded off?
Ah, yes. So, OK, this is about Jeremy Hunt's putting hospitals into special measures. I was going to say Beverly Keogh report, but it's not Beverly, is it?
What's Bruce.
It called? Bruce. Bruce.
If you know him well, I believe Beverly is perfectly fine.
So he has been putting these hospitals into special measures because obviously there is serious concern about what they're calling avoidable deaths. And so they're all being given scores like good or terrifying, etc., to book yourself into or be unfortunate enough to arrive at. And there's a new guy who's taken over from Beverly, or Bruce, as he likes to be called, who's called Richard, which is innocuous. So he's called... I've got a lot of facts at my fingertips. He's called Richard Somebody. OK, you look him up. But basically, he has taken over from Bev, and he is going in... He is going in and looking at NHS hospitals and going, oh, my God, I would not come here. But what they're not doing, they're getting teams of people. So they're getting, like, doctors and nurses, carers and patients, and people who are good at investigating, apparently. So that could be Miss Marple, I suppose, or any private dick who fancies going in. And they're going to be talking to the staff and the patients and staff. And so we will finally get to hear what doctors and nurses think about the NHS, because, you know, they haven't been trying to express their opinions for absolutely ages, have they? But the great news here is there's been loads of politicking around this whole thing, and apparently it's all Labour's fault, all of this.
Well, it was amazing watching Jeremy Hunt. He was fighting with the Shadow Health Secretary, Andy Burman. It was like watching two ventriloquist dolls suddenly come to life and fight over the wood polish. It was the most...
I was listening to them talking about all this on the radio, and they had someone on, I think it was Bruce Keow, is that you said?
Bev.
Bev. It was Bev, but it may not have been. It was someone behind this report was talking about it, and they were saying what he wants when he looks at a hospital is because I want to find a hospital that, you know, my parents could go to, my sister could go to, her children could go to, my great nieces could go to. And I was thinking, what's wrong with this family?
Jeremy Hunt's incredible, isn't he? You go through a point of really reading about what someone's done, and then every time I see him, he's done something that everybody agrees he should be hated for. Mm. And then he just pops up again, smiling again, 3 months later in a different job. And he's done something else. He'll pop up in just another country one day. He'll be president of the USA. And he'll have bombed Australia. And you'll just think, oh, I remember that
that guy. Oh, he's really done well for himself.
He called on Annie Burnham to resign, and you think, you know you're in trouble when the king of hanging on to their job thinks that you should go. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt has sent hit squads into 11 of the worst hospitals following a report by NHS Medical Director Sir Bruce Keogh, which singled out trusts with unusually high mortality rates. Few people have read Sir Bruce's report in its entirety, although sales could pick up when it's revealed to have been written by J.K. Rowling. Much of the Conservatives' ire has been directed at Shadow Secretary for Health Andy Burnham. If you're not familiar with him, he's the one who looks like Ed Miliband when viewed at the correct aspect ratio. 2 points to Vicky. Jeremy, why does this country need me, especially as I'm foreign?
Well, by the way, welcome to our country, Sandra.
You have all been so kind.
Yeah, well, basically, as we all know, immigrants are good for the country. But the Office for Budget Responsibility have said this. And bizarrely, they said that without immigration, there was a risk that all of the gains brought by George Osborne's economic policies would be wiped out, which would be terrible, those gains being wiped out, wouldn't it? Because there's been those gains from George Osborne. There was the one where the thing was closed down. Which was good. But they basically said this, and obviously it's true that immigration makes a place, because without immigration, you know, everything would close at 5 o'clock and the whole country would smell of boiled cabbage. But obviously immigration makes the place better, but politicians fall over themselves and battle with each other to sound more hostile to immigrants than one another. What they say is they're listening to people's concerns. They're basically feeding people's fear of immigrants, but they say they're listening. But most people's concerns are based on myths. If you do a survey and ask people, how many people do you think are immigrants? Most British people will say, everyone apart from me and my direct family. Even people who are themselves immigrants.
But the fact is, foreigners who live in the UK often pay more taxes. I just repeat that for Daily Mail readers. I said pay more taxes, not drive more taxis, just to really clear.
It is weird when people who are immigrants start complaining about other immigrants, and but yeah. Maybe it's a sign of how well they've integrated that they've become so small-minded and insular.
But this is like a one-generation problem, isn't it? Because now is the only time we have a generation who were promised really good pensions and told that this country was just for them. And then there'll be a generation when you try and explain a pension to them, it would blow their mind. Because did you know you used to reach an age and the government paid you to just do what you want, play golf and have a dog? It'll absolutely blow their minds.
But we risk living in a country of old people, or the Isle of Wight, as it's currently known.
I was on the Isle of Wight this week, and I thoroughly would love to disagree with that statement. However...
The thing is, with the ageing population, you can't tell what's climate change and what's just old people moving to the coast so that the edges of the country are bending downwards, giving the appearance of rising sea levels.
My partner and I stayed on the Isle of Wight, a very jolly time. We went to a festival when I was performing, and I said to the hotel, I wonder if it's possible to book some dinner at Harper State this evening when I'd be finishing my show. Well, chef leaves at 8. I said, well, perhaps he could pop something in the oven. Well, he's the only one who's got the health and safety certificate to turn the oven off, so... So, anyway, they finally agreed, Harper State, and we knew that it was a very big deal because our table had been set in the foyer by the front door. And the chef was sitting in his anorak with it done up. The Treasury's independent watchdog, the Office of Budget Responsibility, has published its annual Fiscal Sustainability Report. And who amongst us hasn't waited for it with bated breath? The Office for Budget Responsibility, or the OBR, as the kids call it, was Cameron's brainchild. It's a bit like Michael Gove's brainchild, but without the glowing eyes. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and John have got 4 points, but Vicky and Jeremy are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a cutting from the BBC News magazine.
A few pioneering chefs are trying to revive interest among the Australian public in eating kangaroo. When I heard they were offering it, said one local diner, I jumped at the chance.
And our thanks to Chloe Lees for sending us that. Hugo, which parliamentary scrapper complained about unsporting comments?
This would be Maria Miller. Mm-hmm. She is the culture secretary. She has written to the BBC demanding to know what's happening to John Inverdale. He described the woman who won Wimbledon, whose name I just can't remember, as...
Andy Murray.
That's the one.
Beverly, as we like to call him.
Yeah. As not a looker, and there was uproar. And now Maria Miller has written to the BBC to demand what his punishment is. But she has also been complaining about the Golf Open at Muirfield, just outside Edinburgh. And her complaint is basically there's a big golf competition happening and she's boycotting it because it's happening at a club that women can't join. Which is a bit odd, because it's ignoring a far better reason to boycott it, which is that it's a big golf competition.
If you're banned from attending something, is a boycott the most sensible thing to do? If they say, you can't come here, and you go, I'm not coming here.
That's a good point,
actually.
That is
actually.
A very
good point.
Yeah, I hadn't thought that through.
No. Golf is just the most depressing thing in the world. I mean, I grew up in Edinburgh, as you can tell by my accent. And one of the only accents I can do is the kind of Edinburgh golfing accent, where men called Angus and Douglas wear purple jumpers to go on the golf course because they're quite the wackiest man in the Residents Association. And it just makes me want to shoot myself in the face, honestly, these people. So the least of golf's problems is the fact that it's sexist, and Maria Miller should be leaving the BBC alone.
I always love having a thought about the late lamented Alan Corran. I gave Alan for his 60th birthday, I think it was, I gave him golf lessons. I thought it'd be good for him to get out of the house and not endlessly sit writing and smoking. And he came back from his first lesson and said, well, I was a bloody nightmare toxic. What a hideous, hideous game that is. And as for those bunkers, it's no wonder Hitler died in one. The Culture Secretary, Maria Miller, has written to the Director General of the BBC to criticise the sexist remarks made by John Inverdale about Wimbledon champion Marion Bartoli. Maria also used her letter to criticise the BBC's coverage of women's sport, and I'm with her on that one. There's enough bloody sport on as it is. Maria Miller will also be boycotting the Golf Open this week as it's being hosted at Muirfield, a men-only golf club. Muirfield is officially called the home of the Honourable Company of Edinburgh Golfers, open brackets, except those with fallopian tubes, close brackets. 2 points to Hugo. Vicky, which letter proves someone should go back to school?
This is about a senior member of the Taliban writing a letter to Malala, who's obviously the schoolgirl who was shot for trying to go to school. Well, it's just very bizarre, the idea of getting a letter from a terrorist sort of basically sort of apologising for trying to shoot you in the face. We all have one of those. So he has sent this very, very badly written letter in which he is trying to sound more erudite by quoting, I was going to say Russell Brand, but it's actually Bertrand Russell.
He may have confused the two, that's perfectly
indeed,
possible.
That's very true. So she got this letter sort of slightly apologising. And it had just been her birthday, hadn't it? Mm. Malala's birthday. And of course she did this unbelievably, fantastically brilliant speech at the UN on her birthday, on her 16th birthday. It was like, somebody said to me, what did you do on your 16th birthday? I went, I rode round Richmond Park on a bike swigging from a martini bottle. So we're a little bit different, she and I.
That's pretty satisfying to get a letter from people who have tried to kill you because you're learning to read and write and then their grammar's awful.
That's it.
What I liked is apparently they attacked Malala because she was smearing the Taliban, not because she was trying to get education. Because what a hilarious misunderstanding. She's probably chuckling even now.
Yeah, it was kind of like, yeah, it was. That's just not why we shot you. How bad you're making us look.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of people do you think we are?
But that's the thing about terrorist attacks, Hugo. You always forget about the terrorists' feelings.
Yeah.
So true.
Seems to have got left out. 16-year-old schoolgirl Malala Yousafzai, advocate for education rights, has received a letter from the Taliban expressing regret for attempting to assassinate her last year. They sent a letter because apparently Moonpig don't do sorry we tried to kill you cards. The letter was instantly snapped up by the world's media, an incoherent rant filled with spelling errors and grammatical mistakes. The Guardian was one of the first to report it. Of round two, the scores are Hugo and John have got 10 points and they are in the lead. Vicky and Jeremy have got 9. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the CNN Sports website.
This week, John Sinnott examines the complex relationship between football managers and their number twos.
And our thanks to Ian Windridge for sending us that. Hugo, who was given Shorts Shrift this week?
Shorts Shrift?
Yeah.
All of us, because it's hot.
It is hot, yes, yeah. But I'm not going to give you a point for saying it's hot.
Oh, yes.
Vicky knows,
yes.
Vicky knows.
I know.
Some boys didn't wear shorts.
That's it.
They wore skirts instead in protest that they weren't allowed to wear shorts. Is that right? They're in Wales.
Yes.
Because it's apparently the hottest July in 300 years. And I don't know how they can possibly know that, but there you go. And, you know, the railway lines are buckling and the M25 is melting and we're all kind of generally falling apart. And people are taking their clothes off. I was on the train just the other day, on the tube, actually, and there was a man opposite me, a fat man, and he was only wearing shorts.
Oh,
And there was, like, sweat rolling down here.
Oh.
And there was this sort of globule of sweat that got caught in the hair just above his nipple. I was on the Piccadilly line, which you'll know well, and just at Arnos Grove, it bursts out of the tunnel and into the sunlight. And I was worried that the sun was going to shine into this sort of globule of sweat and form a kind of prism and perhaps set fire to his chest. But that didn't happen.
I'm glad.
I imagine that guy's now telling a story. He goes, I was on the Piccadilly line the other day. This guy was staring at my nipple. I got on at Piccadilly, all the way through Arnos Grove, he was just licking his lips and staring at my nipples.
The public health officials have advised people to stay cool and drink plenty of fluids, and I thought, oh, I'm glad they've said that. I was going to sit in my greenhouse in a duffel coat eating salt. Oh, dear. Do you think they spent ages going, now, how should we word this?
Is that thing true, that if you're wearing a vest keeps you cool? Because men in very hot countries always wear a singlet under their shirt, and it's one of those counterintuitive things that are just supposed to be true. Because my mum would always come out with these things, like, you can always get burnt in the sun, be careful, because it's deceptive. You don't have to be standing right in it. It can be cloudy at night. You can be indoors in bed. You can be dead. And you can still burn.
What happened to those boys? I hope they were punished. Because I know we're all having a laugh about this, but a rule is a rule.
Yeah.
That's exactly the sort of thing at school I would have just said, no, do you know what, that's stupid, we're just going to get in more trouble, we're going to turn up in skirts, we're going to look stupid, and you might get in the papers a bit, but you're not going to get round the problem, we're not allowed to wear trousers, we can form a group, and we can lobby the headmaster about wearing shorts, but this is a short-term measure that is going to just end in detention for all of us, and that's why I was so popular at school.
In order to get round a ban on wearing shorts, boys at Gowerton Comprehensive in Swansea have been wearing skirts. Love this. The boys weren't allowed to wear shorts in the hot weather or roll their trouser legs up as temperatures hit the high 20s in Wales. It's 20 degrees Fahrenheit. Public Health England advised people to stay out of the sun between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Fortunately, the public have had plenty of practice as winter only finished in June. Vicky, who's still engaged even when they're engaged?
This is about people who go to the loo on their phones. No, don't go to the loo on their phone. Sorry, that's misleading. Who go into the toilet with their phone. I have done it. When I'm on the phone with my sister, I will do that, actually, because we share a lot. But it's apparently the main thing people take into the toilet with them to while away the time, because it's really boring in the toilet, apparently, and you can put your app on. And instead of FaceTime, there's something now called Arse Time. I just made that up. That's, of course, not true, but... Is that the answer?
It is the answer. For an extra point, why might peeing be on your mobile one day?
Well, Vicky's wrong when she said, I don't mean going to the toilet on your phone, because actually you can apparently make a mobile work by going to the toilet on it.
Is that strictly true?
Yes,
Jeremy
no, it's
Hardy?
True. It can run on urine.
Yeah, it can run on urine, but I think you have to do something to the urine.
No, you don't.
You just piss on your phone.
You do. That's all you have to do.
It's no, possible it's you haven't fully understood it, Jeremy, if I may say.
Here comes the science bit.
I sometimes go and sit on the lavatory if I'm having a really boring conversation on the phone.
Oh, thanks.
Because it's a sort of... it's a very silent way of showing disrespect for the person you're speaking to.
Or not so silent.
Or not so silent.
But it's not silent anyway because the acoustic changes. And I've got quite a few... I don't know if it's a male thing, but I've got quite a few men friends who think it's OK to phone me on the toilet. And I feel really prissy if I say, are you on the toilet? And they say, yeah, I'm on the toilet. And I hang up on them. And if I see people doing it in public, if I'm at a...
How would you see people doing it in public?
Well, you know, when I'm at a urinal and maybe with someone else. Not pre-arranged. This is, I'm just in a pub or something and I'm having a toilet. And sometimes...
Have having a toilet.
I'm doing...
Doing a toilet.
But if I'm in a toilet and someone comes in using it to phone a friend, I think that person has no idea what you're doing. So I go into a cubicle and I flush the toilet so that I grass them up to whoever they're talking to. And that's why I was so popular at school.
More than half of smartphone users use their devices whilst in the lavatory, according to a survey by an electronics retailer. iPads and Kindles are replacing newspapers in the loo, although they don't flush as well, so do beware. Confusingly, these figures don't apply to bog-standard phones. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Rifkin.
This is from the Suffolk Free Press, and it's sent in by Ron Curtin. And the headline says, Man, 26, banned from town's pubs after police assault. And the extract says, he kicked out and deliberately hit PC Wayne Sturman in the face at least 5 times. Magistrates banned him from entering all pubs and clubs in the Sudbury area, except for the Conservative Club.
Mr. Richardson.
This is from The Telegraph. It's sent in by Anne Pegram near Harlow. It's an article about how the Queen gets her Easter eggs. And it says, every year the Queen has hers made by Nick Crean, the royal warrant holder for fine chocolates. I write to Buckingham Palace, he says, and ask to lay an egg before Her Majesty.
Ms. Pepperdine.
This is from Michael Taylor, under the headline, Mark Cavendish sprayed with urine during Tour de France time trial. It's disappointing that one individual should ruin it for Mark. Some people love him, some people hate him, but to do something disrespectful like that is sad. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Martin Mackay from Inverness, and it's from the website Gumtree. And the ad reads, I need a psychic or exorcist to help clean a curse imposed upon me, my family and home. We have lost virtually everything and need rid of this curse. Please email if you can help. No cranks or wind-up merchants. Life is bad enough.
Let's take a look at the final score. Vicky and Jeremy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Hugo and John with 14. Before we leave you, here is a description from a packet of Profusion Gourmet Salt sent to us by Richard Ledsham.
Mineral-rich crystal salt from the foothills of the Himalayas, formed over 250 million years ago from ancient unpolluted seas. Best before April 2018.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, John Richardson, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Jack Bernhardt, Simon Littlefield and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Susan Murray and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Sam Michel.